Battling the Pornification of America. 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. Just what you wanted to hear, right? Actually, this is a subject that is uncomfortable for most everybody, myself included. Not my favorite subject to deal with for a variety of reasons. I am glad this morning that this is not a mixed audience. I can talk to you man to man about these things in a way that's more difficult when you've got women and children present. So I think that's one of the values of having a men's day like this, so we can openly talk as men about this and some of our unique challenges about this type of subject. It is a difficult subject, therefore often avoided. And yet we can't not talk about important and pertinent issues just because sometimes they're a bit uncomfortable. If you do that, Satan has a monopoly on the discussion and he wins. Satan wins in darkness. He is the prince of darkness. And my goal today is to shed some very much needed light on this very dark and somewhat depraved subject. My objective is, first of all, to inform us about how dangerous this is so that we can be really diligent to avoid this personally and in our families, to protect our families. And then, secondly, I want to recognize that if Kleinwood is a typical congregation, you've got some folks in your group that are struggling with this right now, that are already caught up in this shameful type of activity. And we need to know how to minister to those folks and get them to come clean and help them be delivered from it. It is a terrible poison to our heart, mind, and soul. And yet, it is not something that there's not an antidote to. It doesn't have to be deadly. There really are some very powerful remedies to it and some ways to be forearmed against it that I think we need to be really serious about as Christian men, and especially as Christian soldiers. We don't have much time today. I want to give you at least 5 to 7 minutes between each session so you can have a break. So we got a lot of material to cover. But I want to start off with something positive. I think sometimes the reason why folks are troubled by this is they don't understand, and we don't emphasize enough, the healthy, holy, positive nature of sexuality the way God has designed it. When I think of God's view of sex, and remember, he's the one that invented it. In the garden, it was there, and God looked down at everything and said, it's not just good, but it's very good. And then later when God instituted marriage with Adam and Eve, that was a very important part of what God gave us to bond us to our mate and to keep the family together. When I think of godly sexuality, I think about babies and bonding. And that's really the two primary purposes of sexuality in marriage. It's a very special part of procreation. And Hebrews chapter 13 verse 4 says, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the bed be undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers God will judge. There was a teacher that was teaching a middle school class, and he brought up this subject. And he asked the middle school class, he said, who invented sex? One of the eighth graders raised his hand and he said, "The devil did." And of course, everybody sort of giggled. Isn't it a shame you can't hardly bring up this subject without some folks feeling a sense of embarrassment? And that some folks can't think about sexuality without thinking that the devil is the one that invented it? God forbid that that should be our mindset. Obviously, God invented this and he put it in marriage, and in marriage it is a holy and wholesome and healthy and wonderful expression between two people that is intimate and in the confines of a family is just very special and designed to be pleasurable and in a good way. In fact, one of my favorite passages along this line is Proverbs 5, verses 18 through 19. The wisest man that ever lived said, "Rejoice in the wife of your youth. Let her breast satisfy ye at all times. Be thou satisfied and ravished with her love." That's good counsel. And a part of battling the perversions of sexuality that's out there is making sure that we exalt the good nature that God has given us, and to promote a right kind of healthy relationship in our own marriage. In Ecclesiastes 7, verse 29, we read the statement, "God hath made man upright, but man has sought out many inventions, many perversions." That is so true when it comes to sexuality. And so you take something that is so good and right in its place, and you turn it upside down and you abuse it, and Satan just has a heyday. We have a lot of lessons about healthy sexuality from 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Notice what he says here in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 13. "The body is not for fornication, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. Know you not that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I take away the members of Christ and make them to be joined to a harlot? God forbid." This is fascinating to me. The Bible teaches that your body is a member of Christ's body. So much so, as we are one in the body, if we defile ourselves and sin, then we defile the whole body. We often don't think about that, and we should. And we're joined to someone that we're not married to. We're joined to a harlot. It says you become one flesh. It doesn't mean you're married to that harlot or that prostitute or that mistress. But it does mean that you are bonded to that person, and there's a strong mental connection as you enter into this immoral relationship. He goes on to say, "Know ye not that he that is joined to the harlot is one body, and the two become one flesh? He that is joined unto the Lord is of one spirit. Flee fornication. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body, but he that committeth fornication sins against his own body. Know you not that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit?" He says, you have this from God. Glorify God in your body. And certainly, sexual immorality does not glorify God, for we are bought with a price. There's something unique about sexual sin that is different from any other kind of sin. So this is really fundamental and important. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with what happens mentally and spiritually and emotionally in our hearts and our brains and our souls when we get out of the path that God has laid for us. And we start having sexual immorality and evil imaginations as a part of our psyche and our thinking. So this is really critical information. And so I want to talk about the poison of pornography. We're going to look first at its definition. Secondly, its prevalence, its addictive nature, its sinfulness, and of course, the remedy. Lots to cover in just one session. But let's jump right into it. What is the origin of pornography? Actually, the root of pornography has to do with two Greek words, porne, which has to do with immorality and a prostitute. And another word from the Greek, which has to mean to write, and you put that word together, and eventually it became what we call pornography. So literally, the origin of pornography was the writing of harlots or prostitutes. Now, one of the things that surprised me about this is when I think about pornography, I think about images. And those are the ones that give us the most visceral response, especially as males. But originally, before images were so easily communicated to us, it was the writing of erotic things. So the reading of an erotic novel that conjures up all these immoral things in our minds, that goes to this evil imagination. And so pornography is not just looking at pictures of naked women or men. It's just setting up in your mind, even by reading things that we ought not. So originally pornography was the writing of harlots. What does Webster's have to say about this? If you look up the word pornography, it says it is the depiction of erotic behavior as in pictures or writing intended to cause sexual excitement. Well, most of us, when something comes in front of us like that, we know exactly what that's all about. And it is a lot more prevalent now than it used to be, particularly with the advent of the internet. It started when most homes began to have a personal computer. And young and old, as it became more and more prevalent, especially in the 90s, were able then to access websites on their computer. And depending on someone's economic level, 80 to 94% of households in America have access to the internet, often unfiltered access to the internet. But what really began to just explode pornography in this country and make it so much more of a problem, it's so much more of a temptation, was the invention of the smartphone in 2007. And that has just changed the nature of everything, because it is so easy through a smartphone to observe inappropriate images. 90% of all porn is viewed on a smartphone. And I just want to say to those of you that are dads out there that there's a lot of pressure for kids at a younger and younger age to be given their own smartphone. Now, I understand that there, you know, is need for contact, and sometimes there's some safety issues involved, but those old dumb phones that are still cell phones can provide contact without giving young children access to the internet on their own private phone. And I want you to do everything you can to put off that day as long as you possibly can. Some writers refer to it as almost like handing somebody a loaded gun, oftentimes without any instructions or even making sure that the safety is on. I mean, you would never hand a child a loaded gun. And yet, a smartphone, in so many ways, is exactly that. And some people are naive. Well, you know, my kids are good kids. They're not going to have a problem with that. Listen, this is not about some kid being bad. People, particularly young people, I remember this as a young person, especially a young teen. There's just a natural, overwhelming curiosity about sex. And boy, is it easy to get caught up in fascination with things that you're just too young to handle or to even recognize how serious it can be. Most of the times when you talk about, you know, folks that are addicted to porn, we don't realize that when you read about their stories, they usually started off in something that was really innocent. One man said he was doing a report for school, and something that he hadn't even intended to click on just popped up, and he was immediately taken aback by it, and it was just a second or two, but it just made this image. I mean, he said he clicked off it, but then he thought about it, and it kept on coming back to his mind. And he was curious, and he went back to that site, and then he went to other sites, and before he knew it, he was hooked. That's how strong this can be, especially for a young man. How prevalent is this? Well, extremely so. Sexting is a major problem, and that is where young people are sending usually nude images of themselves or maybe of others, body parts, through a text message. And it's gotten so out of hand that one young man said that he'd never kissed a girl before, in some cases never even had the interaction to hold a girl's hand, but that his first exposure to some sort of romance with a girl was receiving a nude picture of her. And in many circles, if you're not willing to participate in this, you're considered some sort of a prude. I mean, that is really sad. One of the resources I want to recommend to you is something called Covenant Eyes. It's one of the links on the page where I've given you a lot of additional resources. Really a good source of lots of great information. And this information I'm about to share with you comes from Covenant Eyes and the Barna Group and the Pew Research Group, where they talk about how prevalent this is, and the poisonous long-term effects of pornography. It is just about everywhere. 12% of the websites of the internet are pornographic. That's over 24 million sites. Every second, look at the money that's being spent on pornography, and 28,258 internet users are viewing porn every second. 40 million Americans are regular visitors to porn sites, and this shocked me. 1 in 3 porn viewers are women. I mean, I would have thought it would have been 90-95% are men, but that's not the case. And these women are viewing these sites, and they see these types of things that they feature, and it normalizes perverted behavior in the woman's mind as well as the male. 70% of men aged 18 to 24 visit porn sites on a typical month. In the U.S., internet porn pulls in $2.84 billion per year. The entire worldwide industry is worth almost $5 billion. 2.5 billion emails per day are pornographic. That's 8% of all emails. 25% of all search engine requests are pornographic related. That's 68 million a day. 20% of men admit to watching porn online at work, and 13% of women. I mean, most of the time at work, you could find yourself getting fired. I mean, it just shows you how much people are willing to risk in order to watch pornography. Thought this was interesting. The least popular day of the year for viewing porn is Thanksgiving. I assume that's because people are with families. But notice this. The most popular day of the week for viewing porn is Sunday. Isn't that ironic? On the Lord's Day, instead of people bowing down and worshiping their Creator, they're bowing down at the altar of self-gratification. They have a day off, and that's what so many men and women are doing. And so this is amazingly prevalent, and 56% of purported Christian men say that they watch pornography. I mean, wow. Hopefully that is not true among us. But I fear that it is much more common than we realize. The pornification of popular culture. One of the statistics that really shocked me as a parent and as a grandparent is that 11 is the age at which the average child is first exposed to porn. And male or female, an 11-year-old doesn't have the maturity to handle the intense sexual impulses and desires that watching pornography can bring up in a person's heart, mind, and physiology. Most people can tell you what the first piece of porn, if they've ever watched porn, was. It just goes into long-term memory. I was doing a search once on spiritual warfare, of all things, and there popped up this image of this topless woman holding a sword. I was shocked, you know, I immediately, you know, clicked off it. But even as I talk about that with you, that image is there in my mind. I can't ever unsee it. And so this is really powerful stuff. And what happens to some young person who starts to be defiled at that young of an age, oftentimes with parents who are clueless about what's going on? And frequently, people report, even if they are protecting their own children at home, they go to the bus stop or they go to a neighbor's house and the neighbor's kids doesn't have filters on their phone and they go, look at this. And they report seeing it at their, quote, friend's house. And that often is the beginning of the path. 90% of males have seen porn before the age of 18. 60% of females have seen porn before the age of 18. 71% of young adults view unsolicited porn each month. By unsolicited porn, I mean something that just is put there and you didn't want to see it, like what happened to me. You just click in the wrong place and boom, there it is. And you click off it and then something else pops up. It's just hard to get out of the loop. You know, we have a lot of restrictions on the makers of tobacco products in regards to their marketing. You know, you can't market to children. You can't have, TV ads like they used to have when I was a kid for smoking and that kind of thing. Because people recognize that this is a product that most people, if you start, particularly young age, eventually it'll kill you, give you cancer. So we try to avoid allowing people to be sort of predatory in their marketing of tobacco products. There are no rules to speak of about how people market pornography on the internet and in other places. And so a lot of this is very aggressive. And even though people are sounding the alarm, there's just a lot of folks who will not admit that this is something that we've got to be protecting people from, especially our children. 30% of teens are involved in sexting that I just mentioned to you. And only 33% of teens think that porn is wrong. Isn't that a sad statistic? I mean, it's become so common that often people watch pornography, and as far as thinking that they're even doing something immoral, they embrace it. More about that in a minute. Why has it become so prevalent? Well, they often talk about the three A's of porn. The first A is for accessibility. Anywhere, anyone, at any time can find access to one of hundreds of thousands of pornographic websites. And unlike a normal sexual relationship, like in a marriage, sometimes you get turned down. Sometimes your spouse isn't around, they're not available, or maybe they're sick, or maybe just not interested. But you never get turned down with porn. It's always available, and there's a certain appeal to that. It's accessibility. Talk about instant gratification. And then the next A is affordability. It's free. What happens is there's all these free websites, and then people get hooked on the free stuff, and then if they want to delve even deeper into some more graphic and more violent types of things, they wind up paying for porn on some of the many other sites that offer it, and that's where all the billions of money comes in. It's first offered free to get you hooked, and then they want you to pay for it. So it's accessible, it's affordable, and I think this is a huge thing. It's anonymous. You know, it used to be, when I was a kid, I remember you'd go into a 7-Eleven, and then they wouldn't even have Playboy and Hustler and some of those, they used to call them men's magazines, out for anybody to see. It was behind the counter, and it was in some sort of wrapper, and you'd have to ask the fella, could you have this? And usually they wouldn't sell it to a minor. That was an embarrassment factor. And even as an adult, you'd have to go to some peep show or some seedy part of town. You have to make the decision to drive over there, and there was fear that maybe somebody might see you. There were a lot of barriers. It was hard to be anonymous. And most people, there used to be a social stigma associated with it. They didn't want to do that. And so it was less of a problem and less of a temptation. But now you can walk in your closet in your own house and pick up your smartphone and find all types of rancid, salacious material for free. So, it's readily accessible, it's affordable, and you've got this aspect of anonymity. And as I mentioned, it's extremely aggressive as far as the ways they try to market this to people and to get people to begin to get hooked. You know, the way that you can look at this is that porn essentially trains men and women to be consumers, not lovers, to treat sex as a commodity. You know, as Christians, we're supposed to use things and love people. The world would have us to objectify women as men and to use them and to love things, but to use people. Completely turned on its head. And porn is just completely changing people's attitudes about so many different things. I call this the pickle principle. You know, you take a cucumber and you put it in brine and you just let it soak there, and eventually it changes its nature from a cucumber to a pickle. And based on the brine, you can make all different types of pickles. And what's happened is people are just immersed in our culture. And eventually we wind up having pickled brains, and it just changes people's values. And I'm fearful that our public schools are becoming indoctrination centers rather than education centers. And much of it indoctrinating people toward immorality and anti-God and anti-family and pro-abortion type of agendas. Here's a survey. This comes from Barna Research. Percentage among teens and young adults, 13 to 24. Perhaps the biggest standout was the fact that teens, 13 to 17, and young adults believe not recycling is more immoral than viewing pornography. 56% of the people believe it's a sin, it's immoral not to recycle, but only 33 or 32% think viewing pornography is a problem. And so we're going to talk a little bit later in today's talk about why it's such a problem, and that we've got to make it very clear that this is a very heinous sin with just insidious consequences. And so where do kids view digital porn? 79% say they watch it in their own home. And most of the time, the parents are not even aware. I hope you're aware of how easily this is assessed and how you need to make your home safe. Jesus said this in the Sermon on the Mount: the eye is the lamp of the body. So then if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Isn't that interesting how Jesus says that the eye is the lamp of the body? It's the window to the soul. In the Old Testament, Ezekiel talked about the people of that day were allowing their eyes to feast upon detestable things, and how it was a form of idolatry. And that must have had something to do with like the fertility cult and paganism and all the kind of things that they were involved in back in that day as a part of pagan worship. I mean, our society is becoming more and more pagan. Isn't that sad? So how dark has it become? Some young people tell me that they've been watching porn, and one of the side effects of porn is that you have this jacked up testosterone level while you're watching it, and it's not depleted quickly. It's continued to be elevated beyond what is normal for hours after watching porn. And so now you're extremely sensitive to any kind of sexual stimuli, and you can't hardly look at a woman without mentally undressing her in your own mind. The Bible says, to the pure, all things are pure, but to the defiled, all things are defiled. We have a huge problem in our culture with sexual assault. I think a lot of it is these people are watching porn, and then they're jacked up in their testosterone, and they've just calloused themselves against any kind of concern about their thought life, and before they know it, they're just groping these women when they're in their presence. I mean, usually pornography is something that eventually you want to act out rather than just imagine. The addictive nature of porn is something that I'd heard about, but I didn't really realize to what extent it is addictive and why until I did research for this lecture that I spoke on a couple of years ago. The American Family Association has been warning about porn addiction for years, and the AMA, though they've been unbelievably resistant to want to say anything negative about the sexual revolution, of which this is a part, are beginning, based on the research and the science, to come around. And there are numerous rehab facilities for porn addiction, just like there is for alcohol and drug addiction. And I was surprised to find out, and this is one of the resources that I've given you on the page, references. You ought to go ahead and check this article out. Time Magazine, certainly not a conservative publication, had an article in 2016, Porn, Why Young Men Who Grew Up With Internet Porn Are Becoming Advocates for Turning It Off. And it's talking about a whole generation of people now who've grown up with access to the internet, sex in the digital age, watch porn all the time, and then eventually they become incapable of a normal sexual relationship. They're in bed with a naked woman and nothing happens because their mind has been so saturated with just perverse acts that they watch with porn that it's not enough to even do anything for them anymore. So they can't even have a normal sex life in marriage. And so they're all saying, don't let this happen to you. One of the insidious effects of continual porn viewing is erectile dysfunction. Eventually you just overload the circuits and things don't work. Isn't that amazing? That here they are, spending all this time thinking about sex and involving themselves in this kind of stuff, and eventually it just ruins the whole thing for them. Such is the nature of this perversion. Addiction is when a person is physically or psychologically enslaved to a certain behavior or habit that they feel they just cannot live without. And so it can become somewhat all-consuming in its nature. Addiction, a primary chronic disease of the brain, reward, motivation, memory, and related circuitry, a dysfunction in these circuits which seek reward. 56% of all divorces today report that pornography is one of the things that has brought about the divorce. You know, it used to be, when I used to teach marriage and family at Florida College, we used to say that the longer you're married, the less likely you are to divorce. That the majority of divorces occur after only a few years of marriage. It's no longer true. In fact, there's been a huge spike of divorces of people who were married 20, 30 years and more. Well, why the sudden change? Well, in many cases, it's because wives are divorcing their husbands because they realize their husbands are addicted to pornography and it has destroyed a normal and healthy sexual relationship, and they've just had it. You see how ubiquitous this is in our culture and how important it is that we be forewarned against it? I want you to notice what happens in brain. These are actual MRIs. You notice the bright spot in the brain. They show people an erotic image, and there's some little sexual arousal, and a pleasure center lights up. What you see at the top is normal. What you see at the bottom are compulsive pornography users. And what happens is, it's like a muscle. You use it more and more frequently, and it gets bigger and bigger. And if you're constantly triggering this reward center, it actually becomes 3 or 4 times larger than is normal or even healthy. And so what happens is you actually begin to create new neural pathways in the brain as it reacts to all this sexual stimuli. The problem is, it's like any other drug. You know, you take a drug and you initially get this real amazing high, but then you take it again and again, and you have to take more and more bigger doses to get the same reaction. And so that's why this is progressive. It's that what used to be a turn on didn't do much for you, and so you have to get more and more violent, more and more perverted, more and more into other things that are shocking in order to get the same reaction. And it's actually proven to be just as addictive, and it lights up the same pleasure centers that happens when somebody gets high on cocaine or heroin. German researchers recently found that an association between the number of hours of pornography someone uses each week and less gray matter in their brains. Notice over here to the left, that's a normal, healthy brain. Notice the brain on heroin. Literally, it's damaged and there's less gray matter. There's your brain on porn after years of compulsive use. Very little difference. I mean, I thought a drug had to be something you'd inject. No. Your mind is awash with all of these chemicals that your own body produces, and it has the same effect as if you're hooked on heroin. Let me talk for a minute about the science of love. I really learned a lot in this research. There's 3 stages. There's desire, there's attraction, and there's attachment. And what you'll find is that you've got these different chemicals that at different stages are released. And so at the desire stage, you've got, of course, testosterone in the man, estrogen in the woman. And when you start to feel aroused and there's this attraction, there's dopamine, which is sort of the feel-good chemical. There's serotonin. And then at climax, there's oxytocin. That's thought of as sort of the cuddle chemical. That's oxytocin is released in a woman when she's nursing her baby. It's God's way of creating this bond between the mom and the baby. And when a person starts looking at pornography, they're just awash in this cocktail of all these chemicals and hormones that, again, can be just as strong as what happens with cocaine or heroin. Goats are creatures of habit. They will follow one another kind of blindly, and they'll go the same path over and over again until eventually they wear a goat path. And that's easy to follow. I mean, if you're going to walk along this way, you're going to follow the path. Well, your brain is the same way. You start having these short paths to pleasure, and what happens is it affects your prefrontal cortex, which is where you make decisions. And before you know it, you just feel drawn to these reward centers, and your brain is used to having this good feeling of reward, and you just find that you just got to have this fix, just like an addict. You know, when you tie your shoe, you're taught as a child how to tie your shoe, and initially you have to think about it, and then after you learn how to do it, now you get up and you just do it without even thinking. That's the way our brain works. It has this kind of circuitry. You might even find it hard to explain to somebody exactly how you go about tying your shoe because you just do it. And what happens is when you start having your mind and brain connected with all these visual images in pornography, you just find almost that this sort of takes over. And that's, again, that idea of addiction. You literally make these neural pathways that eventually causes you to lose control of basic decision making. I mean, when somebody gets drunk, we understand they immediately begin to lose their inhibitions and their ability to make decent decisions. And that's similar to what happens when they're really hyped up with this cocktail of all these hormones and chemicals that come about by watching pornography. So understanding why this is so addictive, I mean, I've always known it was wrong, but now it's like, oh, I mean, I'm frightened of this, just like I'd be frightened to take a drug. And we ought to be frightened about this. And we ought to be so frightened we do everything possible to warn our children against this. In Romans 7, 2 through 24, he says, I find then the principle that evil is present in me, the one who wants to do good, for I joyfully concur with the law of God in the inner man, but I see a different law in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin which is in my members. O wretched man that I am, who will set me free from the body of this death? That's Paul talking about the war against the flesh and how sometimes you don't want to do things, but you find yourself doing it anyway. That's what happens when somebody gets addicted. And we're talking about good people who just get caught up. When someone views pornography, they end up creating an intimate bond with an artificial fake world and can actually lose the ability to bond with real people. That's what that Time magazine article was about. Really sickening. The sinfulness of porn ought to be obvious to anyone who has any concern about wanting to have a pure mind and understand biblical morality. But obviously, it is coveting and lust after a sexual partner that is not yours. Lust is an inordinate desire that leads to an evil imagination. Jesus says it is not harmless or victimless. He that looks, gazes after a woman, ordered to lust after her, has committed adultery. It's voyeurism. I mean, look at it this way. What kind of moral person would be a peeping Tom? Would you look through your neighbor's window at somebody else's wife who's getting dressed, even if this person gave you permission? Well, of course not. But that's exactly what happens with pornography use. And it damages your own mind and creates a bond where none should exist. It's a terrible violation of one's marriage vows. Most marriage vows include some sort of phrase about, I will cling to you and forsake all others. Well, you're certainly forsaking your marriage vows when you start clinging to these total strangers who are undressing usually for show or pay in a degrading way. One woman said, it is beyond devastating to my soul what my husband has done to me. And when I think about all the women he has been with in his mind. Cheating on your husband and your wife in this way is such a violation of trust that fornication can be grounds to sever a bond that God intended to be lifelong. And of course, I just think it's today's idolatry. It's bowing down at the altar of self-gratification. It's allowing your eyes to feast on these detestable things. Think of Romans 1, 21 through 28. They worshiped and served the creature rather than the creator. Porn is a worship of the human body and an unlawful extension of our sexuality, which leads to dishonorable passions, unnatural relations and what Romans 1 described as a depraved mind. So we in no uncertain terms need to call this out. Now, what's the remedy? Well, again, inform people about this and avoid it completely. And protect your children is the ultimate remedy. Come clean if somebody has been involved in this. Admit the sin with godly sorrow. Cut off all sources and block devices with filters like Covenant Eyes, which is the one I personally recommend. Covenant Eyes has a free download that a person who wants to get off porn can download, and they will give you great material. I think it's like for 40 days in a row. It's like 10 or 15 minutes at a time, so you're not overwhelmed. And it's just really helpful for somebody who needs a tool to get off this drug. But you can't typically solve this on your own. There's so many people who get involved in porn and they realize, oh, this is awful and I'm hooked. And they try to do it on their own and they're just almost always unsuccessful. You need to get an accountability partner, someone other than your spouse that you can go to and that you can talk to and that you know is going to ask you about this and how you're doing. And then you know that if you go ahead and view pornography, then you're going to be stuck lying to your accountability partner. And you don't want to do that. And so getting with someone regularly and helping them be accountable is really key to having victory over this. And they talk about the accountability partner in this app that you can download on Covenant Eyes. Obviously, you got to renew your mind and dwell on positive alternatives. It's not enough to just say, you know, I shouldn't watch porn. The more you say that, the more you think about porn, which is what you're not supposed to be thinking about. So instead of being negative, what you need to do is just maybe think about it for a moment if you have to, but then replace it with something positive. If I tell you don't think about an elephant, what are you thinking about? You're thinking about an elephant. So follow Philippians 4, 6 through 8, and you focus in on making Christ your passion and filling your mind up with positive, joyable things that are wholesome as a replacement. Replacement is a key if you're going to renew your mind and dwell on positive alternatives. One of the resources that I recommend is this book by Heath Lampert called Finally Free, Fighting for Purity with the Power of Grace. It's a very, very helpful book. Pornography truly is poison, but it does not have to be deadly. And as a church, we need to be aware of the fact that there's going to be families destroyed by this if we don't minister to these people and have the resources to help them. I brought with you something that I really have gotten a lot from. And this is not on your biblical resources page. It's from an organization called protectyourminds.com. You want to add that to your resources.com. It's got something called the Quick Start Guide for Proactive Parents. We give our young families at Kirkland this, and we just tell them about this danger and encourage them to be proactive and be aware. 11 years old is the average age that young people are exposed to this. You can't hardly start too early. And there is a book. I recently bought this for my kids to give to their kids. It's called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Porn-Proofing Today's Young Kids. And the idea is, instead of having other people introduce them to porn and they're being shocked by it in a negative way, you as parents need to begin the conversation, hopefully before this comes up. And let them know what's happening and can happen. And let them know about the dangers out there. and give them some idea to understand that there are good pictures and bad pictures. And walk around and show them all the good pictures of family and all that that you have in your house. And yeah, there's lots of good pictures. But you know what? Just like we love these pictures of our family, there's bad pictures out there. Just like there's good food and bad food. You want to eat good food, you want to avoid poison. Well, there's some bad pictures that are like poison. And you just define it this way. You just say, if anybody ever tries to show you a picture of a man or a woman without clothes on, not covering their private parts, that's a bad picture. And that's something you want to immediately go to mom and dad and tell them about it. And immediately walk away and say, that's a bad picture. And don't glance at it. Don't talk about it. Just immediately leave and tell mom and dad what happened. So they give you a plan and you talk to your kids about it. I've gotten a lot of pushback from some of the young families at Kirkland when I talked about this. I was really disappointed. They said, you know, we don't want to hear about this. We don't want to bring this up to our kids. We want to keep them innocent. You know what my answer to that is? If you lived in the desert and you were surrounded by poisonous scorpions, you wouldn't say, I just want to keep my kids in the dark about scorpions. You would show them what the scorpions look like and you would tell them to be aware, and if they ever see one, to get away. Right? So we need to do the same thing with these bad pictures, right? And this gives you a neat little resource. There's one for pretty little kids and then there's one for older kids that explains about some of these things in really tasteful ways. So there are resources out there. Use them. Excellent book. And I really, really like this resource, The Quick Start Guide for Proactive Parents. Printed a bunch of those. I just hand them out to our young families. I want us to avoid having to deal with this if at all possible. Okay. Aside from a big amen, any thoughts about this? How many here had no idea how addictive pornography really is and now it's just as bad as cocaine and heroin? Okay, some of you. Wow, that's just shocking to me. God gave us this sexual bond for marriage to keep us together. It's got a good benefit. It's not a bad thing to be kind of addicted to your wife, you know? Right? Bonding and babies. But boy, has Satan ever abused this in an awful way. It's just destroying people's purity of thought and heart and mind. Yes, sir. Yep.
It's worth noting, I've done a lot of research on this myself, but it seems like the idea of pornography is kind of this despicable culture, this island of material that exists on its own, but it's becoming more and more pervasive. For example, when you talk about uptake in aggression and people's inability to have normal relationships, well, we're starting to see other things in our culture pop up, for example, human trafficking.
Yep. There was a fascinating interview with James Dobson and Ted Bundy, and of course, the mass murderer of those co-eds in Florida. And Bundy just admitted to Dobson that his problems with this all started with pornography, and it just escalated in his mind. And they're connecting sex with violence, because somehow or other that triggers those pleasure centers because it's something that is shocking.
And that interview that Bundy gave was either hours or days before he was set to execute. So that was a man who literally had nothing left to lose.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, exactly. Why would he lie at this point? Yeah. So what we did at Kirkland is I said, listen, I'm certainly not going to ask for a show of hands. I heard of one preacher who asked everybody to close their eyes and then asked the people in the congregation that were struggling with pornography to raise their hands. That's kind of risky. But he said about 60% of the church raised their hand, men and women. That's the way he found out. I don't quite have the boldness to do that. But I did tell folks, look, if you need help, you can come to me or one of the elders in private, and we can be an accountability partner to you, and we can, without judgment, pray with you and help you through this. And a number of people have responded to that. And we're having good success in helping them with it with these tools. Yes, Brother Lopez.
The bigger problem with the whole thing, like any sinful action, is the normalization of it and the acceptability of it.
Yep.
And if you, like you said earlier, if you don't do it, you're proof. So there comes the social pressure, volunteer pressure on these young kids and even older men or women to do what's cool.
Yeah.
I
saw on the news just a couple of days ago, I think it's called, we were talking about it, Adam, Cuties? On Netflix, and it's the sexualizing of 11-year-old girls. And finally, there was enough outrage that they've, you know, kind of backed off. But, man, they are out. They just keep on moving the goalpost and keep on bringing up more and more perversion. And we're becoming more and more pagan. And the pagans were just absolutely enmeshed in the fertility cults and in sexuality in a way that, you know, was just horrific. And that's what's becoming. Yeah, but at least they're all G-rated. I heard that they were going to go into that, and I was very sad to hear that. Is that currently happening on episodes?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so disappointed. That was like one of the last oasis of just true G-rated, wholesome comedies. Yes, sir.
The body of Christ. When we're seeing like serious issues, that these go on to affect so many other people. Think about children that are affected, that we're going to come across as adults, like how we're going to have to be counseling and teaching and helping people that are coming out of this world, coming out of abuse, children that have been abused by people sexually, you know, it's a serious issue.
It's a lot easier to be proactive and to raise a healthy child than it is to try to come on later and repair a damaged adult. We just got to be proactive about this, folks. Yes. Somehow or other, a young child has mutual consent.
Yeah, well, and they actually really ostracized the girls for coming out.
Yeah, that.
And they were really critical. And I thought.
Yeah, it's really sad when you make the victims the criminal. That's really pitiful.
That's what they did, was make them. Yeah. You blaspheme your grandma.
Yeah. You know, the good part about this is as the world becomes more and more pagan and more dark, that's what it was in the first century. We have the opportunity to really be the light, to really be the oasis of moral purity. It can be a magnet for people to want to be a part of this wholesomeness. And we've got to resist the tendency to want to minimize this or begin accepting it or putting our head in the sand and not dealing with it. And so the church grew rapidly in that kind of worldly environment in the first century. And it can happen again, but we've got to be really holy as disciples. And what happens is our families have got to be the oasis, and people see the intimacy and the great marriages, and they say, I want that. See, the Mormons have that reputation. Churches of Christ don't tend to have that reputation. We should, right? Yes. Yeah.
You know, the damage or whatever. The sin isolates you, and it fills you with fear. And so just saying, so if you've got a problem with a terrible pickle brain, come on down. You know, we need to paint the picture of what happens after you confront your problem. What sort of support system, what sort of road
yes.
past that exists? Because the person in that, their brain is that gray... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Other than just, and I'm not saying download an app is bad, app is great, but there needs to be they need to see where they're going to land.
After this kind of thing, there is still redemption and hope and forgiveness, and people need to understand that there is that. And so we need to be careful not to be too judgmental of folks who've stumbled into this. Not that we in any way accept it, but we need to be loving and bringing people back so that there can be a support system. Absolutely. I agree with that totally. Yes, sir.
And to that point, those of us that have dealt with this problem and have overcome it and now have families that look like these happy Mormon families, that's a way to shine a light. But that takes some bravery to say, yes, I have dealt with this problem. I am not as perfect as I look like. And so there is in hope for those that are struggling to know that you can have something better. And it's not the end of your world, even to say that I have a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are a lot of great resources out there now because this is becoming so much of a problem. And that's why I gave you that whole page of links so you can follow up with this. And maybe the elders here can, I know David's very familiar with this, come up with some ways here at Kleinwood to be a ministry and a resource and a support system for people who want a better way and want to get out of this. Yes? Well, I think it was an isolated redwood tree, but I got the point. Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to be that way. Yeah. I agree. All right, listen. This went over. Sorry about that. Somebody's got their hand up. Want to say something before we close? This first. There you go. Yes, sir.
Not like hugging and getting close to anyone that is struggling with a sin, this one or any other sin, and anytime someone is brave enough to confess their struggles, we ought to embrace them because we are the cowards, not them.
Oftentimes. Good observation, brother. You know, in Galatians chapter 6, when it talks about bearing one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ, my understanding of that context is he's talking about bearing the burden of someone's sin. That, you know, help someone deal with the burden of their sin. That's part of what we're supposed to do in fulfilling the law of Christ. So that's certainly an area where we can improve. David, do you have a final comment before we close session one? I know we've talked about this before. We're on the same page.
It's interesting you brought up smoking because I grew up in a time where smoking was pretty common. Brent Clayton, you probably remember the cigarette butts in front of the church building to bring rich and right. It isn't anymore, is it?
Nope.
Statistically, that is shocking. That doesn't happen. And the reason is because of pornography. I think in that we have a way to especially help young people with this powerful temptation. Not to minimize the value of the Bible, but sometimes reading a Bible verse is not going to be the thing that's going to equip them to say no to it. Telling them, and this was actually a story on one of the forums I read, guys battling this. He went on his honeymoon and couldn't perform with his wife on his honeymoon because of his porn addiction. And so that reality that really it boils down to a choice between a virtual sex life or a real sex life, if we can capture that data and help convince people it's true, I think it's a compelling argument coupled with the biblical teaching on this to help guys win this battle. Sexual desire is powerful, and this triggers it in dramatic ways.
Yeah.
And I think that information about how it impacts sex in real life is really, really useful. Peter Wilson has a great book called Your Brain on Porn that would affirm everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Time magazine article was short. It's 4 or 5 pages from a liberal source, from people who were hooked on porn who now are warning people, you don't want to do this. Yeah. By the way, what I've read is the good news is once these circuitries are passed and your brain are formed, a 90-day complete fast is all it takes for your brain to recognize, oh, that path's not available anymore, and it starts being open to new paths. If you're married, now it's with your wife and your wife alone, and that's the new path, and the other path is blocked. So 90 days isn't really that long. In order to break what could be a lifelong negative habit. The longer you've been on porn, the harder it is to break, but 90 days can often be a huge breakthrough.
And just one little piece of data about it. It's more difficult for young guys to break the habit than older guys. And the belief is that's because those of us who are older weren't wired with porn during puberty like young men are, and it appears to be different. So it's another incentive for young guys not to get started.
Yes. Yes, yeah. You know what? It looks to me like, and I'll just say this to the elders here, there's enough interest and involvement in this that there probably ought to be some sort of follow-up practically on how as a church you can be equipped to minister to folks, both proactively and folks that want to come out. So maybe we've just planted a seed here this morning. Appreciate all your good feedback. I think it was worth us going over time. I'll have to cut something else down, but that's okay. Let's take about a 5-minute break and we'll come back to dealing with toxic masculinity.